again, and welcome to the Mike Wilson Show on WWGH. In the studio with me today is Devin Hardwick. Devin is with Preservation Ohio. And Devin, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Almost Mike. Evening.
Almost evening, yes.
Okay, first of all, let's start out with why are you here?
Well,
not just because I asked you to be here.
Well, you're my friend and you asked me to be here this evening. Well, other than that, like Mike said, I serve on the board of directors for Preservation Ohio, which is a nonprofit group, a historic preservation advocacy group, which is a statewide organization. And I'll get more into exactly what it is later on. But that's why I'm here, to talk about historic preservation and historic preservation advocacy and why old buildings are important.
And right now we are in downtown Marion, and there are a lot of gorgeous buildings in downtown Marion. I really admire the architecture of some of these. One that really stands out in my mind, we talked about it before we went on the air, was the old Carnegie Library over on... What street is that?
I believe that's not...
That's Main Street, yes.
Now, growing up here in Marion, the architecture here in Marion quite influenced me a lot through my childhood. Of course, my father was an architect and a student of history as well. So growing up in a city like Marion that was full of beautiful architectural gems, just like the Carnegie Library that you mentioned, really influenced me and made me want to get involved in historic preservation now as an adult. Now, the building you mentioned, Mike, has a wonderful story because it's been saved because it's now owned by the church next door. And they use it as offices and schoolrooms and that type of thing. So it's a wonderful example of creative reuse for a historic property where an organization like the public library had outgrown their space. So that's a wonderful example to bring up.
Yeah, it is. And there are other examples throughout Marion. But you work all over the state of Ohio. You've been working on some projects up towards northern Ohio, some down in southern Ohio. You've been all over the place.
Oh, my word, yes. I've been everywhere, man. Not to break out in song there, but I've been absolutely everywhere. Now, my personal, give you a bit of background personally, my degree is in early American history from Ohio State with a focus on the Reconstruction period, which was the 20 years after the Civil War leading up to the turn of the 20th century. And of course, that was the big boom in American building and the reconstruction of all these fantastic, the birth of the Victorian period in the United States. And that very heavily influenced me in getting involved in an organization like Preservation Ohio as well. But I've been working in preservation most of my working life. When I was 15, 16 years old, living here in Marion, I worked for Carol Neidhart, of course, doing slate roofs, copper roofs, hexing old barns, you know, the old German tradition. So that's, I blame Carol for a lot of my interest in preservation. And if he's listening, I hope he appreciates that. So.
Well, Carol is a fountain of historical knowledge. I do know that.
Oh, yes, yes. Well, and of course, I learned so much from him at a young age, 15, 16, 17 years old, working on these historic buildings. Of course, that led me later on in my life to get involved and to learn more of historic trade. So I do historic window restoration, historic masonry restoration. That's my business. That's my vocation. Of course, then all of my volunteer work is on top of that. Actually getting ready to work on a house down in Urbana that was built in the 1830s. Fantastic three-bay federal-style home. So yes, I'm absolutely everywhere, as is Preservation Ohio. We have meetings all over the state, at least two or three a month. So it keeps us busy, and it keeps us interested, and it keeps the public informed. You know, it keeps these buildings in the news and out there. So that's very, very important. And that's really the point of a group like Preservation Ohio. It's to educate and to inform and to promote advocacy of these buildings and so on and so forth.
Okay. You had mentioned restoring windows. Is that sometimes a pain in the glass?
Yes, Mike.
I think I'm allowed to say it.
I think you are.
That was a silly joke, yes. Okay. Enough window jokes.
Well, now here's one that a lot of people may not get, but I may have to wait in on that one.
Oh, the old weighted windows, yes. I worked on some of those before. You have bunches and bunches of notes there with you from a recent meeting or meetings.
Oh, yes.
So why don't you share some of what you brought along?
Well, I'd like to, for a minute, I'll go on and I'll do a brief overview of what Preservation Ohio really does. We've been around since 1982, and we were originally formed as the Ohio Preservation Alliance. Now, we were originally meant to be the governing body of multiple individual county-wide preservation groups.
Oh, okay.
And we were meant to be kind of their father group, if you will, and we were meant to help them send them in the right direction. And we kind of got away from that because it was a difficult logistics and so on and so forth, and so now we have one large board, and the one board governs all of Ohio rather than having county-wide groups that sit under us. But that type of system, an alliance, is something we've been trying to get back to. We're working on one right now in Ashland, Ohio. There's a gentleman that lives in Ashland who is very passionate about saving some of the buildings there, and through his advocacy group has started a very large Facebook following. It's actually called Save the Hessen Clark Group, which is a historic building in Ashland that we're trying to save. But because of that, we've given birth, if you will, to an Ashland Preservation Group, and that will be governed, if you will, underneath Preservation Ohio.
Okay.
We have one up in Ashland. We have one in Delaware, which is where I currently live now. I was trying to get one started here in Marion a number of years ago, and of course, difficulty there, and of course, me following through with things like that, I need more people behind me. I have too many irons in the fire to be the catalyst there.
So you're wanting to be somewhat like the local historical groups, kind of under, not working with, they're working with the, yes.
See, now I was afraid I was going to do that.
The Ohio Historical Society is now known as...
OHC, the Ohio History Connection.
That's right, yes.
And
your local groups work through them, so maybe you're trying to set up something similar.
Yes and no. We can use that as a model. The Ohio Historical Connection has a lot of irons in the fire. They have a lot of programs going. And a lot of that is, you know, living history, research, that type of thing. But for a group like us, you know, we have one main focus, and that's historic building preservation, period. Of course, there's a lot that falls under that, you know, under that heading. So it's hard for me to say period, but really that's what it comes down to. It's historic building preservation, and there's so many things that are involved there. And for instance, the group that we have going in Delaware is umbrellaed underneath the Delaware County Historical Society.
Okay.
And that's kind of what I was trying to do here in Marion, since of course I'm very involved with the Marion County Historical Society as well. I thought that would be a good parent organization to foster a Marion County-wide preservation advocacy group. But take in point the case in Ashland. That is an individual who started the group. They're going to form a 501(c), and they're going to be an independent nonprofit organization, which is going to be umbrellaed under Preservation Ohio. They won't have a parent organization other than us to answer to.
Okay.
Which is really how Preservation Ohio was originally meant to have been. It was meant to be an alliance of groups, just like what we're doing in Ashland. So anyway, that's a bit of our background. We've been around since 1982. But our biggest thing, our biggest community involvement really, is our most endangered list. Now, there are a lot of programs that do this. The Columbus Landmarks Foundation does this. There's a group in Cleveland that does this. The National Trust for Historic Preservation, of course, does this as well. They send out a nationwide call for nominations. But we've been doing this since 1993. And we have we make a call out for nominations statewide. We have a lot of resources, a lot of people to talk to, historical societies, news outlets, other radio programs, that type of thing, where we make the announcement and the call for buildings to be on our endangered list. And on that note, we are still taking nominations for our endangered list this year. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you our contact information here in a moment. but our endangered list is a wonderful opportunity to allow communities to showcase a property which they are passionate about and passionate about saving and, of course, is a meaningful part of the community's history.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of our big things we do. It's our big community outreach program. And if the buildings that are on our list, we have numerous emails and correspondence and, of course, site visits and workshops to help save these properties. And some of these properties are community-owned, local, you know, government-owned, or they're privately owned. So they range from private homes to public buildings or entire city blocks sometimes. So that's a brief overview of our endangered list. Now, I will throw out there for a moment our contact information, since I just said that.
Yeah, let's give that a couple times throughout the
show. Yes. So our email address is preservingohio, PreservingOhio, @gmail.com. Now, our phone number is 419-612-2236. And, of course, you can find us online at Preservation Ohio. Now, our website will have a link to our endangered site nomination form, which can be emailed to our email address. And that's how the Board of Directors for Preservation Ohio will get it and go through the nominations and so on and so forth.
Well, you've mentioned the endangered list a couple times. What's the criteria to be included in that list?
Well, there's not much of a criteria to be included on the list. It depends on the dire need of the building. So now, the list, every year we get multiple nominations, 30 or so usually. And it's a very hard thing for us to go through and whittle that down to only 10.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to do that because if we had a list of 20 or 30 or 40, we as an organization wouldn't be able to help all of them.
Sure.
You know, and that's what it comes down to, is if we have a group of 10, we know we can help those 10 properties be saved. And so it's 10 we vote on, and then we have a group discussion and have an 11th added to the list. And that's the way it's been since 1993. And that's also the way the National Trust for Historic Preservation does their endangered list. So the criteria, I said there isn't a criteria, but it's not a daunting thing to do, to fill out these nomination forms. There's nothing too small, there's nothing too big. It could be a one-room schoolhouse. It could be, an entire city block. It has to be threatened. It has to be endangered.
Okay.
It can't be something that someone's living in or that type of thing. There's other elements at play there. But it comes down to, for us, is how important was the building in the community? How much does it tell the story of the community? What story does it tell? And so on and so forth. And how can we save it? And that kind of leads me down a path of, there are four major components to think about when you're trying to save an old building and trying to tell that story. And the first is understanding it. Now, a lot of people who aren't in preservation or are historians or aren't, well, I just call myself an old house nut, you know. I'm a fanatic when it comes to historic properties. I want to save them all, and I certainly try my darndest to do so. But a lot of people just look at it as, oh, it's just another old building. Well, that comes down to understanding. You have to understand why it's important for your community, why it's important that this building is preserved to continue to tell a story of the people who built it, the reason it was built, the people that inhabited it, the businesses that were operated out of it. These are all part of your community's history, and once that building's gone, future generations aren't going to understand. The story is going to be lost. It's just like when your grandmother or grandfather passes away.
Mm-hmm.
Those stories are going to be gone.
Sure.
And the same thing happens when we tear an old building down. So once you understand the building, and once you've told that story, people are going to start valuing it. And once you start adding an amount of value to something, people are not going to want to see it torn down. They're going to want to see it saved. Of course, once you start adding a monetary value to things, people are going to care. You know, so those are our first three. But once you get past the understanding and the valuing and the caring of things, that's when people start to enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's when a building that someone tried to save, the building is preserved, people put a value on it, it's now open to the public as a museum. And now that's when people are going to start enjoying it. Those people that tried to preserve it and save it 20 years ago may not still be alive to see people enjoying it today, unfortunately, but that's so often the case. It sometimes takes 20 years to get a building saved, and we have properties like that all over the state of Ohio that we've been fighting for 20 years. But those are the four main bullet points to think about. That's kind of the life cycle of advocacy. You educate, you understand, you add a value, people start to care, and once people care, they'll enjoy it. And so I find that really kind of interesting. I've just recently put this together. I'm rather proud of it, proud of the analogy here. But that's how you start grassroots movements, you know. And that's what preservation comes down to. It has to be grassroots. It has to be a local group that says, we can't lose this.
Right. Folks from outside would not have the appreciation that the folks in that community would have.
Right. Now, you have people like me and other people on the Preservation Ohio Board who are old building fanatics.
That's true.
You know, but we're few and far between. You know, you have a community of 45,000 people, and then you have all of these people driving by this building every day. Well, it's just, like I said, it's just another old building. It needs to be someone who drives by that building every day, who takes up the banner, who takes up that torch, and says, we're not going to let this building be torn down. We're not going to lose this part of our history. And since it's a local person, someone in the community, that's if it's a government-owned building, owned by the county commissioners are going to listen to a local person.
Mm-hmm.
If it's owned by the city councilmen are going to listen to a local person. That's why it's so important to have preservation start at home. We need to have school teachers talk about historic preservation, at the high school level even. It promotes awareness, if you will. It's just like everything else. We hear this term awareness about everything. If it comes to racism or anything else, we have to be aware of what's going on. And preservation is just exactly the same way.
And one thing, and you have more to talk about, but you talked about possibly repurposing some of these buildings. Is that sometimes that's the only way that you can keep it from being destroyed? I'm a purist. I'd rather see it restored. But if it's going to save it from being destroyed, I would rather see it repurposed. Can you give some examples when
this
happens?
I have multiple examples of that. Now, I have to agree with you, Mike. I'm a purist as well. As someone who lives in a historic home and someone who works on historic properties for a living, I see an old building and it's a home, it's a schoolhouse, it's an apartment building,
mm-hmm.
it's a factory. But that's me being a fanatic. But we have other people who are involved with Preservation Ohio who are also fanatic about creative reuse. The first one that comes to mind, which is probably the best example that Preservation Ohio has had a hand in with, is the Defiance Junior High School. This was a WPA Works project in the 1930s. Fantastic brick building, four stories tall, had a beautiful theater inside of it, multiple additions on the back of it. And the community outgrew the space, you know. And of course, schools go outward rather than upward anymore. You know,
right.
A four-story school building is kind of unheard of anymore.
Yes.
They more like to spread out. They're more organically built. Than these institutional buildings of the 1920s and 1930s, which is exactly what this was. And when Preservation Ohio stepped in to start advocating for this building, the city, of course, owned it, and people were so afraid of all of the asbestos.
Oh, yes.
And, of course, the red flags go up when you talk about asbestos or lead paint.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, being built in 1930s, this building had asbestos everywhere. The pipes were wrapped in it, there was asbestos in the window glazing, there was asbestos in the linoleum floors, there was asbestos in the insulation, there was asbestos absolutely everywhere in this building. And so that was the main argument for tearing it down. But, of course, in the process of tearing it down, you'd have a $500,000 asbestos abatement bill to pay for, and that was
sure.
coming out of the taxpayers' pockets.
Mm-hmm.
And so we started meeting with this group of concerned citizens who were interested in saving this building and finding a repurpose for it. And so we kept going through, well, okay, there's this theater. It could be a community, building with the theater. You could have a community theater group. You could have after-school programs for children. Continue to reuse it similar to as it originally had been. Because the city was in agreement with saving the auditorium and the theater part of the building, but tearing down the big four-story building. Well, then, of course, when you have all of this massive floor space, why not housing? Low-income housing.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
Low-income or nursing facilities. And now it's an assisted living home is what the building was reused for. And that's something that makes so much sense. You've got 20,000 square feet of space, which probably is a low estimate for that building. Why not repurpose it into either low income or housing for the aged or that type of thing? Because the infrastructure is there. The building was built to withstand a nuclear attack. And so the building will never go anywhere unless someone says to tear it down. And so now the building has been saved, repurposed, and is now still helping the community as it originally was intended, but now for people that had gone to school there, they're back living there now as older adults.
Now, in a case like that, I'm presuming they have to remove the asbestos, lead paint, all these things, or can they just cover them up?
Well, that's exactly it. When you repurpose a building like that, mm-hmm. you can encapsulate asbestos.
Okay.
And this is one of those things that Preservation Ohio is so good at doing is educating people. Because a new homeowner or a building owner going into a building and they see all these pipes wrapped in asbestos or even old ductwork that had asbestos wrapping in it, around it, it scares people. It might be a reason why someone doesn't buy a home even. And it's nothing to be afraid of. Especially for a homeowner, it's in such small quantities, it's not going to hurt you in the long run anyway. Now, don't quote me on that. I'm not a medical professional. I'm a preservationist. But anyway, yes, it can be encapsulated. It can be painted. Take in case linoleum floors that have asbestos in them. Have a new sunfloor put on top. That's encapsulated. You can put new floor on top of that. You're done. Mm-hmm. That's all there is to it. And that doesn't take an expensive abatement program to do. It takes a qualified carpenter, and you're ready to go. And, of course, any homeowner can take a can of spray paint and encapsulate an asbestos pipe. Of course, because that's asbestos tape in order to keep the pipe from cracking. That's why you have asbestos around pipes. You can paint that. I would recommend spray painting rather than brush painting, because once you brush it, you get dust up in the air.
Oh, sure.
Spray painting from afar with a HEPA mask on, which you can pick up at Menards or Lowe's, and that's available to a homeowner. Those are the tools that homeowners need to have in order to be aware and well-educated in buying or owning a historic property. And that's something Preservation Ohio is very good at doing, is educating people.
Okay. What other topics did you bring with you there, sir?
Oh, my word. Well, there was something here I'd like to talk about that you and I were talking about before the program started here. Now, you weren't even aware that motto, mm-hmm. state saying, is Ohio, find it here. Now, for years, it was Ohio, the heart of it all.
Sure.
And that got kind of controversial, of course. But I think Ohio, find it here is still along the same lines if you interpret it correctly. Because Ohio has so much to offer. Think about Ohio and its history and the founding of Ohio, how it was settled. It was settled from the lake down and the river up.
Okay.
And so you see your oldest buildings at the lake in Ashtabula County, and you see your other oldest buildings down near Marietta and along the river.
Okay.
So those are all 1790s buildings and on up through. So in Ohio, if you're a student of architecture, or if you just love old buildings, or if you just want to go for a country drive and admire the scenery in Ohio, you can do that, and it's so wonderful, because you can find it here. I love that being our state slogan. Because you can find absolutely everything here. You can find a 1790 five-bay federal-style house in the Western Reserve Territory up by Ashtabula County. Or you can find a Frank Lloyd Wright house that was built in the 1940s in Springfield, Ohio. So you have the oldest to the pre-modern, the ultra-modern Frank Lloyd Wright buildings. So we have absolutely everything in Ohio to offer someone who'd be interested in studying or photographing or simply enjoying the aesthetics of historic buildings. Here in Ohio, you can find absolutely everything. And I love that. So Ohio, find it all or find it here.
Well, think of all the different nationalities of folks that have settled here. We have a lot, I mean, English, Scottish,
German.
Irish, lots of German, especially, you were talking about Carol Neihardt a little bit.
Oh, yes.
That's a German name. So many different nationalities of folks that have settled in the area over the years. So they brought their architecture with them.
Yes. And again, that's why we advocate to save these buildings, because it tells that story. It tells the story of our grandparents, of our great-grandparents, and what they brought with them when they came over from the old country, quote-unquote. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of a real broad overview of what we do with Preservation Ohio. But there's so much more that we can do and that we do for home and building owners. Of course, the major thing, the two things, the initiatives, the financial initiatives that people kind of miss when it comes to historic preservation is historic tax credits. And of course, this we've had 2-day, 3-day workshops on historic tax credits alone. So for the limited amount of time we have here this evening, I couldn't get into everything. But if I could give you a brief overview of what a historic tax credit is, it might spark people's interest to go on our website and to look that up. First of all, if you're applying for historic tax credits, the application can be a little daunting. It's a little scary. It's similar to the application that you fill out when you want to be on the National Register of Historic Places, because, of course, it goes to the same people. And, of course, Preservation Ohio helps both with the application for the National Register of Historic Places, and we also help with tax credits. That's what we do. There are people on our board who are lawyers and politicians and have legal backgrounds who know how to do this and can work the system and help people go through these difficult processes. But first of all, if you apply for a historic tax credit, the property has to be on the National Registry to begin with. That's the main qualification. And of course, the next qualification is it has to be worthy. Well, how do you deem it being worthy? It has to be a good example of that of a certain style of architecture. It has to be a certain example of an era of architecture. It has to be a good representation of an ethnic architecture, just like we were talking with German and Irish and so on and so forth. So those are the things to think about when you're wanting to apply for a tax credit. But the initiative, the big thing here is up to 25% of the project will be deducted from your taxes.
Oh, wow.
Yes. So that's the big initiative for people wanting to apply for historic preservation tax credits. So the caveat there is the property cannot be owner-occupied at the time. So if you're working on restoring a private home, which is eligible for historic tax credits, you simply can't be living in the home while you're restoring it. Now, that's difficult for a lot of people, I understand, and there are ways around that, if you are interested in doing this, you can contact Preservation Ohio, and we can help you with this. But the building cannot be owner-occupied for 2 years after the credits have been in place. But after the 2 years are up, you can move back into your house and live it. It really works well if you're buying an old home, it needs restored, it needs a lot of work, and those new home buyers can apply for historic tax credits. But where historic preservation tax credits really come into play and really do help are for local governments or 501(c)s, historical societies that own a building, they obviously don't live in it, but they want to preserve it, they want to be a good steward to the building, so they can apply for these tax credits, and they can have this 25% deducted from their annual taxes, and they can put that money, more money, back into the preservation and restoration of their properties. And so that's why they're so very important.
You're talking about tax credits now. Something came to my mind. Does Preservation Ohio help folks that are interested in having a building restored, help them to find grants and loans that are available?
Yes, we do. We, unfortunately, are not a grant-giving program. Preservation Ohio is not. But we work with other organizations who are. And we have contact information for other individuals who are looking for grants. We help with grant writing. That's something else that Preservation Ohio does. So yes, those resources are there, and we know many people that do that, other groups, nonprofit groups like us, that are grant giving and gift giving. So yes, that's a very good question. Something else that Preservation Ohio does that a lot of other groups don't think about. Now mind you, there are two statewide preservation groups in Ohio. There, of course, is Heritage Ohio, and there's Preservation Ohio. Heritage Ohio is a subsidiary group underneath the National Trust for Historic Preservation. They're the ones in charge of Main Street programs. So they are kind of focused on the central core of our communities, you know, our Main Street. Well, Preservation Ohio is completely statewide. We're talking rural county churches, we're talking rural schools, rural buildings, but we're also talking buildings, you know, beside the Main Street. And also buildings on Main Street. So we work in tandem together to preserve the communities in total. But something else that a lot of other nonprofit groups don't really think about, and other individuals don't think about when they own an old home or an old building. Take for instance, I own an old home in Delaware, built in 1883, and when I pass away, or if I sell the building, I want the building to be preserved as it is. I don't want someone to come in and paint the brick white or tear off the front porch.
Make it a duplex.
Exactly, make it a duplex. Or tear out the historic original windows, that type of thing. There is something that we can do and put in place, kind of a governing body, a governing program, that would protect that home. It's called a historic preservation easement. Now, it works just like you would think a normal easement would work. There's a contract between a nonprofit organization and a private individual, or another nonprofit. But it's an agreement, a contract between two parties, and that is to preserve the building, that it has to be continued maintenance, perpetual care type of thing. We have to continue to see the building being upkept. Now, Preservation Ohio holds multiple easements on multiple buildings throughout Ohio. Of course, the first one that comes to mind is the People's Theater in Marietta. Now, there are different kinds of historic preservation easements. There can be an easement on the exterior facade, which is mostly what we do. But you can also have an easement, let's say, on one architectural element inside the home, or the entire interior of the home as well. It could be as simple as, okay, this is an original fireplace. We don't want this fireplace ever to be removed. Mm-hmm. We're going to put a historic preservation easement on this fireplace. No one will ever be able to tear it out as long as the other group, the other nonprofit entity, such as Preservation Ohio, holds that easement. They will have to have monitoring on it every year. They'll have to work with the new homeowner, say, well, it's time to come in your house to look at your fireplace. And that's how it works. It works wonders for public buildings, such as the People's Theater in Marietta. That's owned by a nonprofit group that maintains the theater and so on and so forth. Well, we're simply kind of the watchdog to make sure they maintain it. And it works really well to promote the advocacy of the building to make sure it's preserved. And at the same time, it ensures that future generations will not let it go down either. It'll never go away. If there is a preservation easement on that building, it will be there forever, and that's a wonderful thing. And as long as Preservation Ohio's around, is what I mean to say. As long as that group that holds the easement is around.
But if somebody buys that property, don't they have the right to do whatever they want to with it?
Well, but they have to buy it with the knowledge of the fact that there's already an easement on the property.
Okay.
So that is a purchasing determinant, if you will. Homeowners would probably, that would scare a lot of homeowners away.
Right.
Now, there are a lot of homeowners like myself who would think, oh, this is a wonderful thing.
Oh, yeah.
This means my house will, you know, I have to maintain it. This means my house will never get torn down. This means my house will outlive me, and that's something we have to think about. These buildings were here before us. We're only stewards to these properties. These buildings have to be here before us. I was recently talking to another preservationist, and this might be a little more fanatic than I am. He said he cares more about buildings than people.
Oh my.
I laughed at it too, yeah. But then I sat down and I thought about it. He cares more about buildings than people. Well, the buildings were here first, and the buildings are going to be here after. So that's an interesting way of looking at it. People are so very important, but the story of all of us is in our buildings. Mm-hmm. And so if we don't continue to preserve these buildings, we're not going to continue to preserve our own legacy. So that's something that a lot of preservationists deal with on a daily basis. So I would highly recommend, if any of your listeners are interested, to go onto our website at preservingohio.com. And of course, our email address again is preservingohio@gmail.com. And our phone number is 419-612-2236. If they're interested in anything that I've spoken about here this evening, you know, please go on and reach out to us. Of course, we have a very active online community on Facebook that's, you know, basically a chat room for historic preservationists all around the state. It's a wonderful resource if you're a historic homeowner or building owner or that type of thing. So I would highly recommend all of you to do that. And now I'm going to make my pitch here.
Okay.
I'm not a salesman at all. I'm not. I'm a talker. I love to talk and I love to teach. But yeah. Here, I'm going to make a bit of a sales pitch. I would highly recommend, if you're interested in historic buildings, I would highly recommend you go onto our website and become a member of Preservation Ohio. Join our group. You know, it's a paid yearly fee, but it helps us do our programs. It helps us help you. I'll sound like NPR here. You know, it helps us help you, and it helps our programs continue, and so on and so forth. So think about becoming a member for our nonprofit organization, and reach out to us and see what we can do for you. And if you, of course, have any questions, like I said, our Facebook group is very active and very interesting and very informative. So,
okay. What about some of the other projects you're currently working on that you haven't spoken of yet? Huh?
Would you like me to talk about what we're doing here in Marion
now? Oh, right in Marion, that'd be wonderful.
Oh, yes. Well, like I said earlier, I'm involved, of course, in the Marion County Historical Society. And most of your listeners are aware, I'm sure, the Marion County Historical Society is a very active group, very locally based, very, very strong, supportive volunteer group. Of course, you and I, Mike, are both volunteers, so there you go. I mean, two volunteers for one organization in one room right now. And of course, I've been volunteering for the Marion County Historical Society since I was 12 years old. I'm rather proud of that fact now.
I remember that little kid running around.
Oh, yes. causing a nuisance, wanting to put on historic clothing and so on and so forth. But, of course, we're getting towards the end of COVID now, hopefully. You know, most of us are getting vaccinated. I'm signed up for my next vaccination and so on and so forth. I'm really excited to get back out there and to be involved in the community again and to get our programs back up and running. So, other than our programs and workshops that we do with Preservation Ohio, the more local programs and things that we do here in Marion for the Marion County Historical Society, of course, our biggest event of the year is our Dinner with Presidents, which mm-hmm. is always the first Saturday in November. Well, throughout the year, we have several other events which are called Lunch with the First Ladies or Lunch with the Presidents. And so our first one for the year, our first one after COVID, is going to be held Thursday, May 27th at 11:30 at Tri-Rivers. Now, of course, you can reach out to the Marion County Historical Society for more information. And, of course, they have a very heavy online presence on Facebook as well. Now, I always portray a president for our Dinner with Presidents. I've done President Franklin Roosevelt in the past. I've done James Monroe. I've done Franklin Pierce. I was going to do, well, no, I probably shouldn't say that. That would be a bit of a surprise for the November dinner. But anyway, for this event coming up, I'm going to be portraying Joseph B. Foraker, who was the 33rd governor of Ohio from 1897 until 1909. And I chose him because of the time period in which he was governor of Ohio. He was coming out of the Reconstruction period. He was coming out of the Victorian period. We were into the, you know, the real industrialized America at this point in time. Automobiles were on the road by the time he left office. Electricity was in most homes. People had stopped relying on natural gas to light homes. So it was a really interesting period in American and Ohio history. So I've been very intrigued in studying him coming up for this event here in a few weeks. And like I said, that's Thursday, May 27th at 11:30 at Tri Rivers Career Center here in Marion. And of course, you can get all the information and tickets. It is a ticketed event at the Marion County Historical Society if you'd like to reach out to them for that information. So that's what we're doing here locally, and of course we're gearing up for our November event as well.
Okay. And do you happen to know the hours right offhand of Heritage Hall? I think it's opening, if it's not already open.
I can look it up.
Okay, let's see if we can find
the wonders of.
I'm going to have Brandy on here soon from the Historical Society. I'm sure she'll talk about that as well.
The wonders of having a smartphone today.
Adam Lepp, I did get your text, and we did turn his volume up. So we're looking for the Marion County Historical Society, get the hours at Heritage Hall, which is a historic building in and of itself.
Well, and there we have another wonderful creative reuse of a historic building that had lost its need. The Marion County Historical Society building here in Marion was the old Marion County Post Office, and of course it's been Heritage Hall since the 1980s when the post office moved out, of course, off to Barks Road. So it's a wonderful example of creative reuse and so on and so forth.
Okay. So he is Googling right now to see what we can find out.
I apologize. I can't type in text at the same time.
Well, an interesting thing about
the
Heritage Hall is it also includes the Popcorn Museum. So you get two museums for the price of one. And I think that's pretty amazing. The Popcorn Museum consists of mostly the Crater popcorn machines from the early part of the 20th century, and as well as a popcorn wagon that was at one time owned by Paul Newman.
Which is a Holcomb and Hoke machine.
There you go.
Now, I could not find the Marion County Historical Society's hours online right now, but I did find their phone number, and I can give that to you here. So if you're interested in any of the events that the Marion County Historical Society is putting on, such as our dinner with presidents or the dinner or the lunch with presidents coming up in a few weeks, the phone number for the Marion County Historical Society is 740-387-4255. And of course, you can reach out to them by email at mchs@marionhistory.com. And so that's a wonderful resource for local history. And like I said, if you're interested in preserving a historic building locally, they have such a wonderful resource. Their archives here in Marion are absolutely wonderful. Now, I'm not saying that simply because I worked in the archives here when I was in high school, but we have a wonderful resource there at the Marion County Historical Society for historic information, historic photographs. Especially if you're restoring a historic home, you want to know what your home looked like 100 years ago.
Sure.
You want to know where the trim was, if the doors had been altered, if the window or configuration had been altered, and so on and so forth.
Well, Devin Hardwick, I'm going to cut you off there because we're just about out of time.
All right,
but
I'm all right.
Be listening again next Monday at approximately 5:15 to the Mike Wilson Show on WWGH. And remember, you can find us online. If you can't pick us up on your radio, check us out online.
You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 FM LP, Marion, Ohio. The place to talk. From broadcasting legends